Kildare Today with Clem Ryan.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
I suppose we might as well begin with wishing a happy birthday to my sister Trish Kelly in Kildare Town, and it's from her sister's brother's extended family and friends. Have a great, great day, Trish, in regards to that. The weather won't be too bad, as we said, throughout the course of the day. So any messages, you can keep them coming. Text or WhatsApp 0833 97 97 97. Email studio at kfmradio.com, or you can chat to us on 045 898 999. Okay then, time to get underway in regards to the TUSLA 2020 report. It's CEO Bernard Gloster writes in his introduction to the report that 2020 saw the conclusion of TUSLA's three-year corporate plan, and they continued with preparation for the coming 3 years. The agency is now advancing through our continuous improvement plans, and new ways of working are becoming a reality in all we do. The continuation of the impact of COVID-19 into 2021, he writes, is a concern for all, but as can be seen from our account of 2020, it will not limit us in the provision and growth of services to the children and families who need us to be there for them. Let's have a look at the report then, because we're joined by Director of Services and Integration at TUSLA, Kate Duggan. Good morning, Kate.
Good morning, Clem.
Thank you for joining us. So certainly, I mean, nobody needs to state how interesting 2020 has been. Your vision and your mission states, Kate, families and communities are empowered and strengthened to keep children safe and nurtured. Your mission, dedicated and committed to working in partnership with children, families and communities. You might elaborate a little on that, because we certainly hear the name TUSLA nearly on a daily basis in our media, sometimes positive, other times quite negative.
Yes, Clem, you've rightly outlined what our vision is, and we are committed as an agency to deliver that vision and that mission for the children and families and young people that we serve right across Ireland. As you said, 2020 has very much been, you know, a really difficult and challenging year for everybody, for all state agencies, but for particularly the children and young people across the country. And we have maintained, and we have continued through 2020, and have been committed to maintaining frontline services for children and families. We have focused through 2020, particularly in relation to child protection and responding to domestic, sexual and gender-based violence services and supporting children in care. And I think before I talk about what we need to continue to do, I think it's important to recognise really that we have over 5,000 staff across the agency that have done really Trojan work over the last year, and also the colleagues of ours that work in the several hundred funded voluntary and professional organisations across the country, where all of them really did redouble their efforts and continue to provide vital services in the context of COVID-19. And that required them to really look at delivering that mission and that vision, to show that in very difficult circumstances, how did they come together to try and respond differently, to respond innovatively, to do things in a totally different way. And I think for us as an agency, and I think the community and voluntary sectors that we work in partnership would say, is one of almost the positive outcomes for all of us from COVID-19 has been that engagement and ability to really work together in partnership and to really work with families and with communities to see what they needed from us. And I think COVID-19 really brought home to us, I suppose, the importance of living our vision and our mission, that we will work together with communities, mm-hmm. that we will empower communities and empower families to try and protect children and to support children, particularly for us. I mean, we're obviously a child protection service, but a really critical focus for us is our early intervention welfare family support service.
All right, well, let's look at some...
It's really come to the fore, but yeah. Before, Clem, because I do want to acknowledge, you know, we are the first to say that as an agency, we still face many challenges, and we are not where we want to be in terms of, you know, the experience that service users have from our service. We recognise that there is more reform required. We're delighted that the TUSLA board and our parent department have approved our reform programme for 2021. So we are now embarking and have started to embark on a significant reform programme, and that's around reforming our structures, it's around reforming our practice, it's around reforming our culture over the next 3 years.
All right, okay, we can have a look at that in a minute, because I want to look back on the review of the year in particular. Yeah. 69,712 referrals to Child Protection and Welfare Services in 2020. Mm. I mean, that if we just take that at face value, that would seem to indicate a crisis in childhood in this country. What do you make of that number?
The number is obviously, it's a high number. I think for us, that tells us two things. First of all, it instills confidence in us that members of the public or any of those professionals who are mandated reporters are recognising, are observing the signs of neglect or the signs of abuse or
but
the signs
70,
of harm to a child.
70,000, Kate, 70,000 yes. referrals, which yes. am I correct in inferring that that's 70,000 cases where somebody or some agency or some authority indicates concern about the welfare of a child? 70,000.
Yeah, yeah. And I think, Clem, that is something that as an agency, but certainly as a society, that we need to face up to, and that we are facing up to. There are children out there today right across Ireland who are experiencing childhood experiences that any of us would not want from them. Those obviously relate when they're being referred to TUSLA. It's in relation to neglect, it's in relation to emotional abuse, physical abuse or child sexual abuse. But it also, because as I said earlier on in the call, a significant focus of the agency has been on early intervention family support. There are many families out there today who, just by the very difficult circumstances that they find themselves in, just require support with parenting. They love their children, they are dedicated to their children, but for, you know, different reasons, they're finding it difficult to parent in a way that they would like at a particular time. And so for us, a significant focus is on ensuring that we have the resources in place to actually to support those families, to support those parents, to be parents, to support those children, and to have a more positive experience. And you might note in some of the media or some of the numbers that might be out in the media, we actually started a new and improved methodology of capturing our referrals to the agency. So previously, up until 2019, the only referrals we captured were those that required a social work response. But actually in 2020, we now have a more improved methodology, and so we now capture all child protection and welfare referrals into the agency.
All right,
so
let me look at
capturing
some... Yeah, okay, yes. Just sorry for coming across you there. Let me just look at 5,882 children in the care of the agency at the end of 2020. Mm-hmm. 91% percentage of children in care who were in foster care, 2,943 young persons, adults in receipt of aftercare services at the end of 2020. Now, all of that then back-ended or bookended or underpinned with a financial allocation to TUSLA of €791.15 million. I mean, it's an extraordinary amount of resources. And, of course, what's of most concern, what we've been just discussing, the 70,000 cases of referral, the 5,800 children who are in care, and 91% of those in care who were in foster care, etc., etc. I mean, I'm not sure that the full population of the country understands how widespread, how enormously concerning that child welfare issue might be across the whole perspective of Irish society.
Mm. I think there's a couple of things there, Clem. First of all, I think you rightly articulated, we're very grateful for the budget we received this year of €791 million. And that budget certainly supports us in delivering the types of services we would want to deliver. Certainly, as we said, it's around providing services to the early intervention, the support, the children in care. But we also have educational welfare services. We are children's services regulator. We have our adoption services. We have our education support services. So I think also that some of, you know, the general public may not be aware of the depth and breadth of the work that TUSLA do. We are the funder for all of the 60 DSGBV, domestic and sexual gender-based violence services across the country. That services, or those services, would have received for us in 2020, $29.9 million in 2021, sorry. And that has been an increase of about 38% in funding from 2017 funding. And again, that rightly is required, and I think, again, everybody is aware of the significant increase in demand for DSGBV services, particularly highlighted during the pandemic. So I think our budget is a strong budget, but it also reflects, you've talked in numbers in terms of the number of children accessing our services, young people accessing our services, the number in aftercare services that we're supporting. But also what we're seeing as an agency is a significant increase in the complexity of children and young people presenting into our services. We're seeing children and young people suffering from significant mental health issues, children and young people who are, unfortunately, engaged in drug misuse, children and young people who are at an early age entering into criminal behaviour and demonstrating criminal behaviour. So actually what we are seeing is an increase in the complexity of response that's required, and where we have to really work as a number of state agencies together to try and meet the needs of those very vulnerable children. But certainly we are seeing an increase in, as I said, the complexity of children and young people and the type of responses and supports they need. And, okay. and we are working very hard to try and deliver.
Okay, and I can certainly see that, and you know, we could speak for another hour in terms of the how comprehensive this report is. There's just, excuse me, a couple of final points to deal with, and you've been talking about all the supports that you give, and one of those, I'm looking at page 22 of your report, the Prevention, Partnership and Family Support Services, and what you give to people, and I'm very struck by some of the service, one of the paragraphs there. During 1 week in May, over 9,000 remote calls took place, over 8,000 food parcels were delivered, and over 1,700 Mehel check-ins, as it's called, were carried out, and over 2,100 new families accessed services. We're supposed to be a first world country. Mm-hmm. We're supposed to be one of the richest economies in the world, notwithstanding what's happened with COVID. And yet those statistics point to the starkest of pictures, which is happening in many cases below the radar, is it not?
Yeah, it is. And I think, Clem, again, that point that you raised, 1 week in May very much describes our response in COVID-19. And it goes back to my initial point where frontline staff right across TUSLA stood still and stopped to think, what do these families need? What response do families need now in the context of this COVID-19 pandemic? And the same is for the wider society. Families were facing very difficult circumstances where, you know, there was jobs being lost, there was social isolation, children weren't able to access schools, they weren't accessing their after-school activities. And so we recognised, but together with the community and voluntary sector, a different type of response was needed to support those families. And what is described there as the 1 week in May is actually very typical of what was happening right across Kildare, right across the whole country, where TUSLA and community and voluntary services came together and looked to see, what do we need to do? So we could no longer go to the front door and check in on how those children and families that we were concerned about were doing. Those children and families couldn't access their after-school club. They couldn't come to maybe their parent and toddler group. So again, with community and voluntary sector, it was around moving to more remote means in terms of checking in, telephone calls, looking at delivering food parcels, where we knew there was a vulnerability. And the Mehel check-ins. Mehel is a programme that we use, which we're very proud of, which is where TUSLA staff bring together all of the different, I suppose, agencies that are working with a particular child where there's concerns, so whether that's school, whether it's the An Garda Síochána, whether it's the HSE services, where they identify the needs of a particular child and family and look at a plan to put in place to try and support that child and that family. I think what our annual report has demonstrated, and what we're certainly eager to get the message out there to the public, is TUSLA is an agency that just isn't about child protection. That is one of our priority pieces of work. It is our statutory obligation in terms of child protection, and it is what we really strive to do better at. But TUSLA also, as I said, provides significant family support, early intervention, welfare services, and also educational support services that we're very proud of and that we are seeking to continue to, I suppose, expand and improve right across Ireland and right across the country. And so if there's any families listening to you today that have a concern in relation to, you know, their current situation or their ability, you know, to kind of to parent at the moment, or if they're having any struggles or any difficulties at the moment, we really would encourage them to contact TUSLA.
Okay.
If you go onto the TUSLA website, the contact details for the local offices are up there. And the other thing, Tim, I would like to highlight, particularly to your listeners this morning, you know, you did reference on the call earlier about the number of children who are in foster care. And for us, we are an international leader in terms of the number of children we have in foster care compared to residential care. We very much, when a situation arises that a child, to be kept safe, has to be taken into the care of the state, we want to be able to provide those children where possible with a family unit. And right now we are challenged to get the number of foster carers that we need. So if there's anybody listening this morning who's interested in becoming a foster carer or wants to know more about becoming a foster carer in Kildare, we really would appreciate if they could log on to fostering.ie or contact their local TUSLA office. Because as I said, particularly in the Kildare area, we are challenged at the moment to get foster carers. And unfortunately, when we don't have a foster carer and we have to take a child into state care, the only other option then is to put them into a residential service. And while they would be very well looked after and cared for in that service, our preference would be to have those children in the family unit.
All right. And there is nothing more selfless, I think, than one can do but take a child who needs care and just affection and empathy to assist them in their recovery from whatever negative circumstances they've come from. It's an extremely comprehensive report. 2020, you've done a great job in articulating the contents. We could speak for an hour on this, but Director of Services and Integration at TUSLA, Kate Duggan, thank you so much for your time, Kate, and indeed to all the services you offer. Good luck with that.
Thank you, Ken. Thank you very much.
And good morning to you. All right, quick break then, and we're heading off to the Kildare Newbridge Municipal District.
Kildare Today with Clem Ryan.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
Just before we head to Kira, Paul Spratt has emailed us. He's regarding the COVID tracker app, and he's wondering what happened, because he said he's a regular user and the data available on the app is way out of date, he says. It was last updated on the 11th of May 2021. And Paul, all I can suggest that you can... I think Kira has a bit of info on that. Have you, Kira?
Yeah, I believe, Clem, at the time it was to do with the cyber attack when it came to updating. So, to my knowledge, that's why it hasn't been updated. But as we know, we don't really get the county-by-county breakdown as often as we once did.
OK, off you go then, Kira, because coming up in a moment, I'll be talking fishing.
Yeah, and now I'm going to speak to Councillor Tracy O'Dwyer of Kildare Newbridge, Fine Gael Councillor. Good morning, Tracy. And Tracy, can you hear me?
I can hear you, Ciara. Can you hear me?
Good morning. I can. Loud and clear.
Good.
We're going to go back to February here, Tracy. You had a motion asking Kildare County Council to engage with neighbouring councils to identify border routes that could be shared in terms of gritting. What progress, if any, has the council made on that?
Unfortunately, not a lot, Ciara, to be honest. I raised this motion, as you said, back in February, and then I had a follow-up question at our July meeting, because July is the time that the gritting route is discussed and agreed. So I had obviously asked that Kildare County Council engage with neighbouring councils to see could, you know, border routes be shared to try and include a few more routes on the gritting. But unfortunately, due to lack of resources, neighbouring counties are also not able to help out. So I was actually looking for three additional roads to be added. One of these roads used to be gritted, and I'm not sure why it was taken off, but, you know, I was hoping to get the Sunny Hill Road the Dunlavin to Kilcullen Road and the Brannockstown to Carnalway Road. And Carnalway Bridge is particularly bad in frosty weather, and that was the road that used to be done. So, you know, I'll have to keep working on this one, I'm afraid, but it is down to lack of resources.
Okay.
And hopefully that's something that we can address.
Now, Tracy, you were asking the council at the most recent meeting about the stage at which Athgarvan Health Check is at. Just remind listeners what exactly Athgarvan Health Check is.
Well, Athgarvan Health Check, from residents talking to me, this process has been going on, in some case, I think people think since 2018, so long before my time. But we as councillors got a briefing back in January 2021, and it was a draft presentation. And it was based on a survey that had been done, and 476 people had responded. Now, these are residents of Athgarvan. So the health check kind of forms the part of a town plan. So it looks at... covers areas kind of like the context and character of the town, the current land use, the growth and consolidation, urban design, and it identifies areas of opportunity. So obviously we had seen a draft of that back in January. I was keen to see where was it, what stage was it at, because we hadn't really heard much about it since then, but COVID would certainly have played a part in that. But thankfully, the update we got was that the health check and urban design analysis of Athgarvan has been completed, and the details of the design and sample renewal plans were actually made available to the public for their feedback last Thursday, I think, on the Kildare County Council website. And it's hoped now that the town renewal plan will be finalised late in 2021. And then this will allow the public realm team in Kildare County Council to apply for funding to carry out the various projects identified in the town renewal plan. So while it's good progress and it's great news, it's important now that we keep the focus on this target or on this project and keep it moving in the right direction to ensure the projects that are identified are shovel ready for potential funding that may become available down the line. You know, anyone that lives in Athgarvan or even travels through it knows the issue they're having with speed, the lack of cycling, the lack of walking facilities. So it's really important that this project progresses and actually comes to fruition.
Well, Councillor Tracy O'Dwyer of Kildare Newbridge Municipal District, Fine Gael Councillor, thank you.
Thank you, Ciarán. Good morning.
Thank you indeed, both, on that one. Now, keep your messages coming, 0833 97 97 97. That's text or WhatsApp, email studio at kfmradio.com, or our phone number is 045 898 999. Just a reminder that after 10 we're going to be speaking with Páirc Cribben, Chief Executive of the Vintners Federation of Ireland, to find out how things are going in regards to the opening this morning. I'm intrigued by something I heard in the news this morning, just from one owner who said she had lost 19 of her 26 staff. Where did they go? What were they doing? And why weren't they returning to work? I suppose in cases, many of them might have accessed maybe other work. Maybe was it the PUP payment that's been going on, and people saying how difficult it is to get staff. And in some cases attributed that people didn't want to come back to work because they were doing okay on the pandemic unemployment payment. But there's thousands indeed going back to work today, as Ciarán mentioned to us earlier. Right, okay, let's move on then. Inland Fisheries Ireland is warning that fish are under distress, and that the soaring temperatures we've had and low water levels across the country during the past 10 days or so could make fish kills unavoidable. Our rivers are one of our great, great resources. Dr. Greg Ford is Head of Operations, Inland Fisheries Ireland. Good morning, Greg.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Thank you for joining us this morning. We'll talk about the fish in distress in a minute, but are under duress even. But 13 kilometres of illegal fishing nets seized during the past year. Is poaching that widespread still?
Well, I suppose a lot of people thought that in 2020 things would have eased off with all of the restrictions during the COVID. But lo and behold, you know, it actually was an opportunity because there was less people out and about. And we found last year and even this year we've had quite an increase in the amount of net we've taken off rivers and in the sea off the coast.
And 1,200 items seized last year. Is that what you're talking about there?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's very interesting because an item can be anything from a bike, a car, a boat, or even just a rod. So we would take all sorts of implements that are used during fishing, and some of them you'd be kind of very surprised as to what the initiative's been used in relation to poaching and taking fish. So a lot of modified pitchforks and things like that, all used for taking fish at different times of the year. So we were constantly, we had staff out in the field all of the time, and through the winter, through the spring, and you just get different kind of activities at different times. But the real stuff that does the damage are the nets.
Yeah, and I, as a child, lived in a village, Clarecastle in County Clare, which was a salmon fishing village. I don't know if you know it or not. And there were 30, 40 boats on the river. And I used to hear the fishermen use this term of a fixed engine. Yeah. And I remember saying to a cousin of mine one day who was going out fishing, and I was out in the boats myself fishing on a number of occasions, what's a fixed engine? It didn't seem to make sense.
I think that's it's a real misnomer, because in the law, an engine is basically a net. But a lot of people get very confused when they hear you talking about a fixed engine or something like that. So an engine is any device used for catching fish. So it could be a trap or a line or a spear gun even. We've taken those as well. But a fixed engine normally applies to where a net is fixed, maybe from one bank of a river to another, or from from a weighted anchor to another to another weighted anchor, just to keep the net in place.
Yeah, and I also live in a town now, Athy, which is the beautiful Barrow River, and a great local anglers club as well, who often tell me, look, we're just absolutely have a big, big problem with people who come in from abroad, and they don't observe the fishing regulations in this country. Your inspectors, obviously, you keep tabs on that.
Well, I suppose it's not such a big issue this year, because most people are from within the country of Ireland. But the difficulty is you get a lot of people who may be now kind of resident in Ireland,
yes,
who wouldn't have grown up with the culture. And
that's who I'm referring to. I'm referring to people from other countries who have come to live here.
Yeah, we probably have some of the most complicated fisheries rules. There's over 400 bylaws on the statute books, and it may just refer to, let's say, 300 yards of the River Barrow at a particularly vulnerable pinch point where all the locals know that you can't do such and such there. And then some person comes in, mad keen to catch fish, and they go doing all the wrong things in the particular place. So yes, it's a problem, and I think overall, because we're still lucky enough, and very few countries have such a good population of, say, salmon and wild trout and that we actually have to have all of these regulations to protect them, because it's one of the last real strongholds of salmon this far south. As temperatures warm, it's going to become harder and harder to protect these.
Yeah, Greg, we're talking about poaching from that aspect there. How much difficulty are we still experiencing with fish kills?
Fish kills are really, we've had four in the past week. It's been a bad week for fish. We had a very big one in Cork. Luckily in your area it hasn't been that bad. But, they're turning up anywhere and everywhere. Now, what are the real causes? Water temperatures, even though it's cooled off this morning, the water temperature in an awful lot of places is up near the mid-20s. And for our native fish, particularly salmon and trout, that once it gets to 20, they're stressed. When it gets to 22, they really just have to go down to the bottom and sit still.
I didn't know that. That's something I empathise with the fish and the salmon and the trout as well, of feeling that heat and looking for somewhere to go. I'd have thought that they might have liked the more warm water.
No. What happens with, as the water warms, the amount of oxygen dissolved in the water decreases. And obviously, this is what they rely on to live. So as the oxygen level goes down, they become more stressed. The other thing that this warm weather encourages is plant growth. And as you probably know, plants are produce oxygen, but at night they transpire and they actually use. So river plants at night use oxygen, as do the fish, so that if you have very low levels of in the river, everybody's competing for the oxygen at night, and at that time fish are very, very vulnerable to any pressure that hits the river. And we're just passing end of the silage cutting season, and silage effluent is utterly lethal. I mean, it's just unbelievable. The effluent that comes, you know how bad human sewage is as a pollutant?
Yeah.
It really can knock things out. Silage effluent is 200 times more potent.
Wow, that's amazing altogether. So a big caveat. A bottle of it can do intense damage then.
Intense damage, absolutely.
And finally, Gregory, briefly if you would, although weather conditions are changing now and it's going to cool a bit, you have a few bits of advice that you want to give anglers.
Well, look, I mean, the main thing is, I suppose we're